Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paul Ehrlich, the president of the Center for Conservation Biology and a professor of population studies at Stanford University. He's a fellow at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, the American Philosophical Society, and a member of the National Academy of Sciences. He's also an adjunct professor at the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Ehrlich.
Nice to be here.
And a large part of the continent of Australia in the middle, there's a huge pool of hot air that's been hovering there now for some weeks. And every time it moves slightly in one direction or another, wherever it moves, it creates bushfires. And now it's just moved a little bit towards the city of Sydney that experienced a all-time record-breaking heat on January the 18th of 114.4 degrees Fahrenheit. Clearly, global warming is alive and happening in Australia. Why do you think we're not really hearing too much about it over here?
Well, I think we call this the Murdoch high, the Murdoch heat, because here, for example, the false news network, Fox News, is basically forbidden by Murdoch to even discuss climate disruption. There is a very well-funded program, funded largely by the fossil fuel industry, to confuse people about the whole issue of climate disruption and to make it seem like there's a lot of scientific differences and that it's not really a serious problem. And if it is a serious problem, it's not human-caused, and that's all hogwash. I think of all the people in the world, Murdoch has probably done more to mortgage the future of our children than virtually any other human being by continually through the Wall Street Journal, the Australian, which is a rag in Sydney you may be familiar with, and so on. And, of course, when you have friends out there, I was talking to friends in Westleigh, which is a northwestern suburb of Sydney, the other day, and they're not far from a bush reserve, and they have all their valuable things packed and by the door because they're sufficiently worried about the huge number of bushfires and the chances of more coming along. And, of course, they had to go through that day of something like 114 degrees of heat. So Australia is seeing the tiny little edge of what's going to happen in the future. The idea that this is a sign of the future is wrong. That is, at the moment, we are still adding greenhouse gases to the atmosphere at a very rapid rate. And the kind of thing that's happening in Australia now is a tiny foretaste of things that are going to be much worse. Just like in the United States, Hurricane Sandy isn't what's going to be happening in the future. Things much worse than Hurricane Sandy are going to be happening in the future.
Again, I'm speaking with Paul Ehrlich, the president of the Center for Conservation Biology and a professor of population studies at Stanford University. Now, of course, these conditions in Australia are not only making the continent uninhabitable for humans, but its spectacular biodiversity is being affected. I was reading recently a piece in the Guardian for their reporter down in Australia, pointing out that some of the people that he knows that have farms, and these are not in the hot inland, but more towards the coast, the normal agricultural area of Australia. They're saying that the droughts are so severe that these 300-year-old gum trees died of thirst, and then suddenly the rains come and they violently strip off the precious topsoil. So it's
this a grim picture.
And it feels like nature is, you know, Gaia, if you will, is writhing in agony and trying to tell us something.
Well, this is exactly what the climate scientists and the computer models have shown. More extreme weather. It could be that suddenly Australia will have a cold snap. We're changing the entire pattern of circulation and patterns of precipitation over the entire globe. Our agriculture developed in an unusually stable period of climate on the planet, the last 10,000 years. It's now moving out of that regime, and the most serious problems that humanity is going to face are not going to be sea level rise, which will probably only affect, at least in this century, a few hundred million people. It's going to be changing patterns of precipitation and extreme weather and droughts that are going to clobber agriculture, and that could easily affect billions of people, and that's what we should be really worried about, and we should be pushing the idiots like Murdoch aside and starting to move on this, at least in Australia, which is vastly overpopulated and an already marginal continent as far as the environment is concerned. At least there's discussion of population size there. In the United States, of course, we don't even deal with the issue, even though in terms of climate change and wrecking the planet in general, we're the number one culprit.
But Australia has is exactly the same size as the United States, minus Alaska, with a population of under 20 million, I believe.
Slightly over 20 million, love Australia. Yeah. I've seen much more of it than the average Australian. I've been in every section of the country. It is not a rich continent in terms of its productivity. Its soils are poor. It's got not enough precipitation where it needs precipitation. It hasn't got really big rivers. And if you've ever been to the end of the Murray, darling, you know, but it hasn't got enough water to barely reach the sea most of the time. Australia, you can't judge the ability of an area to support people by its area alone. After all, the moon has got a lot of area on it, but we can't live on the moon. We can't live in the middle of the oceans. And Australia is, in one sense, a poor continent. In terms of its biodiversity, extremely interesting plants and animals that are being wiped out now at small and no small cost to humanity. But Australia is also, instead of becoming a model, showing, for example, with its superb solar scientists that it can run Canberra largely on solar power and then selling the solar technology to China and India where it would really do some good, Australia is still exporting coal. Australia seems to have, and again, it's my second home and a country I love, it seems to have the urge to become a third world country and make most of its money by simply exporting unprocessed its mineral products. And that's ridiculous.
Well, it's been referred to as China's quarry. And it's interesting to note that while Australia is going through this agony with high temperatures and bushfires, China, at least its biggest city, people can't breathe the air.
China is in a terrible position. I was recently a guest of the academy there, and going into Chengdu, going into Xi'an, you see them putting up hundreds of high-rise apartment buildings to try and take care of the hundreds of millions of people who want to move into the cities. They all have low ceilings, no cross ventilation, and are designed for air conditioning, and yet you can't breathe the air because the coal they're burning to generate the electricity to make the to run the air conditioning is making it virtually uninhabitable. And when they can no longer do that, of course, the apartment buildings will be uninhabitable because there's no way to keep them cool enough for people to live in during the summer.
So just to deal with the politics of Australia, because the politics of China are so opaque, except that we can say that there's a little bit of disarray at the top with the Communist Party leadership, and there is a possibility of a more liberal succession happening later. And certainly the country is much, much more wired, and the internet is roiling with a lot of activism. They just got rid of the Chinese Communist Party censor. The activists online caught him paying off an employee for sex. So there's a lot happening in China bubbling beneath the surface, but it's difficult to quite predict. But Australia's politics are pretty straightforward, and unfortunately, the Liberal Party, which is the Conservative Party down there, is a mirror of the American Republican Party in as much as their anti-science, know-nothing Tea Party types seem to dominate that party. And they're in bed with the big extraction industries of coal and iron ore, etc. And lo and behold, it looks like they're going to win this next election in spite of what's happening to the environment.
It's really terrible. And the thing is that Australia has got superb ecologists, superb environmental scientists, maybe per capita the best in the world, but the Australians aren't listening to them. And that's a huge, huge mistake. They should be listening to Dick Smith. They should be listening to Dick Smith. They should be listening to Bob Carr. There are people in Australia who know what the world situation is like, what Australia's situation is like, and would try and do something about it. But as long as the Murdochs and his idiot friends are in charge, you're going to have the same kind of problems we have in the United States, where we have the most overpopulated nation in the world. We are the one that's wrecking the world's environment more than anyone else, and yet in our past presidential election, there wasn't a single important issue even discussed. So Australia and the United States are sort of bound together by stupidity at the moment, and it's up to the citizens of both countries to get it changed.
And in both cases, the evidence is manifest that climate change is underway and that we're going to have more and more of these extreme weather events. And what's going to happen, though, in terms of forming a kind of alliance, if you will, against the deniers, which are largely the coal companies and the fossil fuel industry, who are pumping money, and of course they've got the propaganda arm of Fox News. They're obviously being effective in terms of maintaining a level of denial about the reality of what's happening to the planet. But on the other hand, surely people in the insurance business, there's a reckoning going on there, surely.
Oh, yeah, Swiss Re and other companies are extremely concerned and speaking out about it, but the well-funded propaganda from the right has been extremely effective. 30 or 40 times the amount of money is going into that that's available to try and tell the truth. And, of course, the scientists are stuck. They've got to be honest. They've got to say what they think the situation actually is, whereas the Murdoch gang is perfectly free to lie in its store teeth continuously and does it. And so it's to think that it's a scientific debate is a mistake. It's a street fight where one side has to fight with only truth and one arm tied behind its back, and the other side can fight as nasty as it wants to, and it wants to.
But usually, though, plutocrats sometimes change their mind when it hits home. And his home country of Australia, surely he must know, Murdoch, what's happening there. And I know they have properties and farms and stuff. And somebody's got to be telling him that the continent is boiling.
Well, I think actually Murdoch at one point has said he does believe that the climate is changing and that human beings are doing it, but he doesn't put it through the Wall Street Journal, which, by the way, is a good newspaper except for its editorial pages, which are run by morons. The Australian occasionally has some honest stuff in it, too. You wouldn't believe it. So there is some hope. But again, I think the real hope, and we're pushing on this very hard as we can within my community, of trying to get a social movement going that is going to try and force the government and the plutocrats to actually do things that are in their own best interest, but they don't really figure it. In other words, it's high time that people like Murdoch started thinking about their grandchildren and great-grandchildren and what kind of life they're going to live instead of trying to increase their already swollen bottom line. One thing is really critical is the issues that are now in the public debate in the United States about debt and not much of the world, debt and debt ceilings and so on, and fiscal cliffs. That's all nonsense. For every nickel of debt, there's a nickel of credit somewhere. That problem can be entirely solved by negotiation among human beings using pencil and paper and computers. You can't negotiate with nature. You can't say, well, we're going to blow through an increase of 2 degrees Celsius around the planet, but you're just going to have to let us grow our crops when we're at 5 degrees Celsius above today's temperature. Can't be done. No way to negotiate with nature. We have got to remember that nature controls, and if we don't change our ways, it will change our ways for us, whether we like it or not.
Well, Paul Ehrlich, though, again, the president of the Center for Conservation Biology and a professor of population studies at Stanford University, and also an adjunct professor at the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia. In many ways, ground zero for plutocrats is Wall Street. Wall Street got its feet wet with Sandy, the hurricane. And my understanding is that New York is going to have to invest billions and billions to sort of become like Amsterdam, protected by seawalls. Again, is that coming home to roost?
You would think it would. I mean, you got to remember that even in normal times, there are hundreds of pumps that have to be kept going all the time to keep the subways from flooding. That's how low New York is. And if you lose electricity, you lose the pumps. The subways flood, the foundations of the skyscrapers start to rot, and the whole damn thing comes down. And so if they're not concerned about sea level rise and climate change, they sure as hell better become concerned soon. We need the kind of mobilization that we got during the Second World War. We have huge, huge problems coming down the pike. We have 85% of our energy coming roughly from fossil fuels. That should be reduced to something like 40%, and that's a horrendously difficult task. We have to re-engineer. Our infrastructure is crumbling, but we have to not only re-engineer it and repair the water handling infrastructure, we have to rebuild it for flexibility so that water can be taken to new areas where water is needed. In other words, our present patterns of irrigation and so on are not going to work as the climate changes. And so we really need a mobilization, but few people even realize the problems out there. Most people think their food comes from supermarkets. They have no idea, for example, that the agricultural system puts something on the order of 30% of the greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And, of course, it's agriculture that is most threatened by climate change. We are utterly dependent on fossil fuels for our food, and yet we cannot, we're basically killing ourselves, or at least our grandchildren, by burning the fossil fuels. So we're in a really tight spot that almost nobody recognizes. I mean, of course, the scientific community has recognized it for a long time and spoken out on it for a long time, but we're in the middle of the Enlightenment. You know, we're moving away from evidence, running our society on a basis of evidence, and we're starting to run it on a basis of faith. Lots of luck.
Well, Paul Ehrlich, I wish that President Obama at his inauguration on Monday would make the speech that you just made. Of course, on Sunday, he was sworn in for a second term. We know that he's a great speechmaker, but as you pointed out earlier, in the last election, global warming was barely mentioned. If we need another sort of Manhattan Project or Kennedy vowing to get a man to the moon and back, if this is the moment we're in, what can we do to get the president? He's our only leader at this point, to get him on board and get him to recognize it. You're talking about just one aspect of it, which is to reduce our dependence on fossil fuel from 80% plus down to 40. I don't know what time frame you mean, but
ASAP, as fast as possible.
Right.
And Obama has been informed in all of this stuff. And of course, but he has a bunch of idiot advisors, you know, 35-year-old English majors who don't understand anything of how the world works, who keep saying you got to do it this way, that way, that way, if you want to get reelected. Okay, they got him reelected. Now there is no excuse. Obama has got to get out there and say that the Congress has totally blown it by not doing anything on climate change, that we have other extremely serious environmental problems that are never even mentioned, like toxification of the planet. We have very dangerous chemicals now spread from pole to pole. Losing the biodiversity that runs our life support systems is absolutely essential to agriculture, becoming more and more vulnerable all the time to epidemic disease, and fighting resource wars that could easily turn nuclear, particularly, for instance, India and Pakistan might have a nuclear war just over the fact that the water supply that supplies their agriculture is going to be reduced as the Himalayas melt, as the snow and ice of the Himalayan plateau melts. These are all gigantic problems we should be working on, and it's going to be up to Obama to actually do it. He's got the brains, and he has the knowledge, but I'm not sure he really gets how serious it is.
Well, Paul Ehrlich, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
And nice to talk to you. Good luck.
Thank you.
And wish good luck to Australia.
Well, good luck to all of us, I say.
That's right. Take care.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Paul Ehrlich, the president of the Center for Conservation Biology and a professor of population studies at Stanford University. He's a fellow at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, the American Philosophical Society, and a member of the National Academy of Sciences. He's also an adjunct professor at the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking about the conservative crack-up here in the United States.
So speak out loud of the things you are proud of. And if you love this coast, then keep it clean as it holds. Cause the way that it shines may just dwindle with time, with the changes it will confront. So you know some people, they just won't understand. No, just won't understand these things. Thank you for your message, but I don't understand.